Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg. It's the Saturday before Thanksgiving, and I've asked a few Catskill characters to share thoughts and or memories about their Thanksgivings. In the first half of the show, we've got two sweet stories of Thanksgiving from Teresa Tulipano and Tommy Cambridge. These are beautiful memories and some thoughtful observations about tradition at Thanksgiving. We're going to start with Teresa Tulipano. Teresa, I am so happy you're doing this Thanksgiving show with me today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Tell the listener about these mythical Thanksgiving dinners you had in Northern California with your grandma, Frances Coffey Capitoff.
I grew up overseas, and when we moved back to California, it was just before I turned 18. You know, overseas, we would try to have Thanksgiving dinners, but they were just our immediate family. So it wasn't a big brouhaha. There wasn't guests coming over, and my mom always burnt the turkey. So it was not our favorite holiday. But as soon as we got back to Northern California, where my family was originally from, we started going to Thanksgiving dinner at my cousin's grandmother's house. So I always called her grandma or franma. She had been this incredible fine artist. She went to high school during the Depression, and she went to 13 different high schools because her dad had to move around to keep the family eating. And she found a way to make friends in every school because she played the trumpet. So she would try to be in the band at every single one of those schools. And she was also just this incredible artist. But in the time when she was going to college, women were not allowed to take a degree in the arts. The only art degree that was open to them was home arts. So she went to school for home economics. And she ended up being a home economics high school teacher. She had a house on Apple Drive. Of course, there were apple trees in the backyard. And she taught her own kids as well as all of their friends. And she would make these apple pies. She was the best cook I've ever known. Her apple pies, she would put into a brown paper bag to bake. Everybody says, didn't the bag catch on fire? It did not. And somehow it would make the crust perfectly crispy, and the insides, the apples, would not be mealy like they often are if you overcook an apple pie. So truly, the perfect apple pie. The thing that was cool about Fran, you know, she had three kids. Only one of them had kids, but everybody who was friends with her kids while they were growing up would choose to come to Fran's house for Thanksgiving, even if their own families were doing a Thanksgiving dinner. And so over the years, it became this multi-generational party. Tons of people would show up at Fran's house for Thanksgiving, and they would start coming early in the day. I'd say 10, 11 a.m., the doorbell was ringing already. And she had this giant dining room table. We put the extra leaf in, and that was the main adult table. Then we'd have card tables for the kids, a few kids' tables. And because it was Northern California, we would have people outside on the patio. The Davenport, which is what she called a sofa, would have a line of kids all eating from plates on their laps. There'd be people with tray tables. She used to have a giant barber's chair in the living room right in front of the TV that she liked to sit in. And people would fight over getting to sit in the barber's chair. She made the best broccoli casserole, but everything she made was fantastic. The turkey was always good.
How many turkeys did she cook, and how many apple pies?
So she would cook a couple turkeys at least every year. But if we were going to have a really big crowd, she also would make a ham. There was every side dish you can imagine. She'd start cooking about a week early. Because she lived on an apple orchard, she'd basically be gathering apples the whole fall, and there'd be bins and bins of them. Eventually, my cousin Patrick started making the apple pies with her, and he is just as good as her. He also made the mashed potatoes with her, and he won't give up the secret recipe to this day. I can't tell you how many apple pies there were. And of course, people brought food too. There was just everything. There was tons of baguettes and cheese and mincemeat pies and every type of fruit pie you can imagine. And also the part of Concord, California she lived in, all the streets were named after fruit trees in her neighborhood, like Peach Street or Apricot Street. People would bring those pies too. My uncle Bob was this really cool guy, her son, and he was a filmmaker. He taught film at UC Berkeley. A lot of his friends were kind of famous or very well-renowned artists. A lot of his college buddies came. And then you would have like me and the cousins of my generation, and our friends would also come.
And don't forget to tell the listener where you were sitting.
Oh, yes. I always, from the day I started going to those Thanksgivings until the very last one I attended, sat at the kids' table because there really just wasn't room anywhere else. It was really the only time I saw a few of my cousins. So it was sort of our one chance to know each other would be there at the kids' table. But Uncle Bob would also sit at the kids' table. You asked how many turkeys we had. I forgot that Bob would deep fry a turkey and or do a barbecued turkey. Some years it would take hours longer than we thought to get that barbecue turkey. So we'd all be real grateful for the one that came out of the oven. He also had an electric knife to saw the turkey. And I thought that was the most ridiculous thing. Like, we would make fun of him. And he was like, it really cuts down the work. I was like, whatever.
You told me that there are sometimes over 100 people there.
The coolest thing about it was that everybody was such an interesting character, an individual. My whole life, I had been told, you'll never be able to make any money as an artist or a writer. And yet, at Fran's Thanksgivings, with all of these cool people, you know, people who worked on Star Wars at Lucasfilms, you know, there were people who were getting Fulbrights to go to Brazil to make films. I saw the evidence that that was untrue, that I could actually be an artist. So I felt very lucky to be around that group of folks. I wanted to graduate to the adult table because they were kind of interesting and cool. But as it turned out, it was pretty good to be at the kids' table the whole time.
Teresa, thank you so much for sharing that. I know whatever you're doing for Thanksgiving will be wonderful, but there's no way it could can you even come close to your grandma's Thanksgiving. So thank you so much.
I appreciate being on Catskill Character again. It was really nice. Always fun.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is really about being grateful and expressing that gratitude in myriad ways. Families create traditions, but over time, those traditions can change, just as families do. Let's join Tommy Cambridge now and find out how he handled the changes of Thanksgiving traditions in his life. Tommy Cambridge, I am so happy to welcome you to the Thanksgiving show for Catskill Character.
It's good to be here, Donna. Happy Thanksgiving season.
And for those listeners out there who do not know, Tommy is the executive director of Growing Older Together. And I would love for you to just quickly tell the listener what that organization does.
We've been in operation for almost 10 years. We're an all-volunteer organization that supports seniors in Wayne County and Western Sullivan County so they can age in place and live in the homes of their choice. And our volunteers provide transportation, home chores, social visits, technology assistance, things that allow people to thrive where they live as opposed to just exist.
Well, there's a lot of seniors out there maybe who aren't going to be as fortunate as you and I are to be with family or friends for Thanksgiving. And that's what we're going to talk about today. You know, some of the traditions that we typically associate Thanksgiving with. The topic of our conversation is how is it for us when we break those traditions? Is it a good idea? Is it not a good idea? And you're going to address that. Maybe we could start with what you typically did growing up.
Yes, I was very fortunate that I had a family that was tied to traditions around the holidays. Thanksgiving was always a wonderful, bountiful time. My mother was an excellent cook, and the food was always traditional. She wasn't really one to experiment, but that didn't matter because what she brought to the table was delicious and sumptuous, and we would help as my sisters and I got older. But I can still remember the smells and the feeling and the warmth in my mother's home. And when I moved to New York years ago, I wanted to carry that tradition and that respect for tradition. And I would continue to have Thanksgiving dinners in my tiny little apartment in Greenwich Village And somehow I managed to squeeze people in, you know, and create those smells and those sounds and those feelings to the best of my ability, because I loved the memories that were evoked. I've done that up until just recently, whether I was hosting at my house or going to somebody else's house. It was always home-based.
So that's the part of the tradition that was the thread that went through all of your Thanksgivings up here, is that it was always in someone's home.
Home for the holidays. That's right, Donna.
This tradition became something that you had to look at last year. Let's talk about how you got invited to not only not go to one of your friends' homes for Thanksgiving, but to go to the Chestnut Inn, which is located near Deposit, New York. How did that come about?
So you had mentioned growing older together. We have a summer fundraiser each year, and we had an auction that went along with it. And one of the auction items was donated by Settlers Hospitality. They're in Hawley, Pennsylvania. And it was a night stay at their property, the Chestnut Inn on Lake Aquaga, which is near Deposit, New York. And my good friend Jane Luxinger won the high bid, decided she was going to spend her night for Thanksgiving with her daughter, Claudine. I had mentioned that I was waiting around for an invitation to somebody's home, and it had not come. And she said, why don't you come and join us? And I thought, actually, I said to her, oh, so nice. Thank you so much. I'm going to hold out. Surely an invitation will come along. And one didn't. And I thought, well, is now the opportunity to think differently, to get outside the box? I was still thinking no, because I didn't have anywhere to take my dog, Maud. The kennels were all full up. And then I found out that the Chestnut Inn accepted dogs. That was pretty much the clincher. I still hadn't wrapped my brain around it. I thought I was giving up tradition. And in fact, I was, but I didn't realize that I was welcoming in a new tradition, because it ended up being a spectacular time there, really. The inn is very beautiful. It's a rambling wooden structure. I say it's sort of like something you might find in one of our national parks on a smaller scale. Lake Aquaga is beautiful. And the night before Thanksgiving, right after we arrived, there was a light snowfall that just made everything like a Hallmark movie, Donna. It was really wonderful. And that snow kept a lot of people away, which meant there were rooms the next night. And we were having such a nice time playing cards and Scrabble around the big stone fireplace with Maud there at our feet. We decided we were going to stay an extra night. So it really was our own little private Hallmark movie. There were other people there, but just the right amount. It made it very intimate. And the food was really, really wonderful. And it was nice to not cook anything for a change.
The Chestnut Inn is owned by Settlers Hospitality. This Thanksgiving, breaking with tradition, Bill and I are going to the Settlers Inn and picking up four Thanksgiving dinners and schlepping them up to Connecticut so we can have Thanksgiving with our kids with food from the Settlers Inn. Interesting, right?
Yeah, they're all over the place. You know, they're a very generous corporate sponsor of Growing Older Together, so we're very grateful to them for the work they do to support our mission.
Well, what I'm taking away from what you're saying is that it's great to remain teachable, and you just never know what's going to happen. You could have the most fabulous time of your life.
I did, and I think it really revolves around, as you said, being teachable, being open, and as long as you've got good people around you, that's where the traditions come from. I mean, it's not really the food. It's the people who make the food, the people you enjoy it with, whether you're opening presents, decorating a Christmas tree, whatever. It's having the right people around you who share your respect of traditions, and new ones get created that way. And the old ones don't necessarily have to go away forever. They can just be mothballed for a year or something, you know? And at the end of it, you have an inventory of traditions that you can choose from.
I love that expression. You can mothball the traditions. Put them away and take them out again.
Exactly.
I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
I hope the same for you, Donna. Thanks for having me on your show.
We're going to take a quick break here and return with another Thanksgiving tale with my guest, Alex Hankoff. We'll be right back.
The Radio Catskill Music Auction is live online. Bid on rare collectible vinyl records like the infamous Beatles Butcher cover, a holy grail for record collectors, Profile by Duke Pearson on the Blue Note Jazz label, and music from Big Pink. The band wrote it in the Catskills. You can buy it to support Radio Catskill. Don't miss your chance to get your hands on all of our incredible items and experiences. Bid on the music auction at wjffradio.org.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Senator Chris Van Hollen on how the Democrats should fight Trump.
Some people argue that we should just always come back to the economy and prices. But to suggest that we should look the other way in the face of all these other outrages is a mistake, because the American people are tiring of Donald Trump.
Senator Chris Van Hollen, next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character, celebrating traditions and tales of Thanksgiving with three Catskill characters, Teresa Tulipano, Tommy Cambridge, and in the second half of the show, Alex Hancock. Let's get to it. Alex, welcome back to Catskill Character.
It's always good to be here with you, Donna.
So happy to see you again. We're not going to be talking about any of your trips today. This is the Thanksgiving show. So I thought we'd start off by you just maybe mentioning what you did typically when you were a kid for Thanksgiving.
Well, I grew up in New York City, so we had pretty small Thanksgivings in the apartment, but sometimes we would go and travel to go see my mom's family in Utah or my father's family in Long Island. So yeah, we would kind of try to get out of the city as much as we could during those Thanksgiving holidays. Mm-hmm.
When you got older, it's my understanding that you had different kinds of Thanksgivings, which you had to tell me a couple of times for me to understand exactly what the picture looked like.
Yeah, well, we had a sort of modern, mixed, blended family, right, with lots of different characters. And so we would kind of bop around to my stepfather's family and things like that. But when I got older, in my 20s, I finally decided to just pull the plug on all that and throw my own Thanksgiving so I didn't have to deal with any kind of family politics.
All right, so you went from the family Thanksgivings to when you had your own place out in Brooklyn, you decided you were going to have your own Thanksgivings. And what did those look like?
Essentially, what it was these friendsgivings I would throw, because a lot of the friends in my group hadn't had families yet. You know, we were still sort of like in our 20s, early 30s. And, you know, so we would all get together at my loft in Williamsburg and throw Thanksgivings that way. Because a lot of us were sort of like, quote unquote, orphans. You know, nobody traveled all the way across country to go home or whatever. So I would sort of collect all of these friends that stuck around New York for the holidays. And mm-hmm. It became quite a tradition, actually. We ended up doing that for, 10 years or so. Get bigger and bigger every time. I think one year I hosted for 40 people or something like that. And thinking back to it now, it's pretty wild, because I don't know how I managed to do it in that little Brooklyn kitchen.
I know you're a really good cook. And I was thinking, when did you learn how to cook?
I had a roommate straight out of college who was obsessed with the Food Network. So we would watch the Food Network all the time. And back in like the Japanese Iron Chef days, before like Chef's Table and Iron Chef and all that stuff became like Americanized, there was just Japanese Iron Chef. And so we would watch that all the time. And I learned a lot from those Food Network days. Gavin, my friend, he was a damn good cook too. So he taught me how to make it happen.
Now, in any of those shows, was there a Thanksgiving show that you like went, oh yeah, I want to do that?
You know what's funny is I still use the Alton Brown Thanksgiving YouTube clip from those Food Network days. It's so dated now. It's got to be from like 1999 or something. And I still draw. I bring that up every Thanksgiving just to make sure that I'm doing it right.
Okay, so you had these great Thanksgivings in Brooklyn, but then you moved out to the country. When you first saw your house, was one of the things that you thought of, oh wow, I could do a real proper over the river and through the woods kind of Thanksgiving here?
Yeah, I think so. I was definitely inspired by the kitchen in the house here, you know. And it's funny, I mentioned earlier, you know, I don't know how I pulled off those Thanksgivings back in Brooklyn, because even here with the kitchen as it is, I mean, it's a giant stove and there's lots of room to move around in. But like when we throw Thanksgivings here at the house now, I mean, it's still just packed in that kitchen, you know, you can't move. So it was a huge upgrade, no doubt. And you know, I think that I'm doing it justice by cooking the way I do every year for my family in that kitchen.
So let's talk about that first Thanksgiving in your new house in the country. What did you envision? And then let's talk about how it rolled out.
Well, the first Thanksgiving in the country, you know, I had visions of Norman Rockwell and everyone getting together around the table with the fire going in the fireplace. And, you know, I like to think about curated and aesthetics and this sort of thing. So I think that it was planned pretty nicely. But it had been the first time that a lot of my family had been up to the house. So it's a super cozy house. There's plenty of bedrooms to put everybody. So that was great. And as my sister and her daughters, my two nieces, come in, everybody's super excited. Oh my God, the place looks so great. You know, I'm like, yeah, let's go outside. I'm going to show you the property because we've got this beautiful big pond. This is the first thing we did. The Gaget family comes with many, many dogs. And I've got a dog named Lobo, who's like a giant Alaskan Malamute. And then they've got all of these little dogs. So my niece Lulu has two little Chihuahuas, and my niece Chloe has a amazing, beautiful little white pit bull mix. And then my sister Palmer has this like tiny little frou-frou toy poodle. And so these women show up at the house, and it's just like dog extravaganza instantly. You know, I'm like, let's get these dogs out of the house and let's let them run around, because they had all been driving from Long Island, you know, for however long that takes on Thanksgiving. So went up to the pond to let all of the beasts run wild and Lobo show them the ropes around here a little bit.
You were thinking, okay, let them run. Let them get their exercise. They'll be cool after that. But that didn't really work out the way you planned.
Yeah, well, you know, best laid plans, right?
Exactly.
So you got the dogs running around outside. Everybody's all hyped. The kids are excited to see the property. You know, my sister's proud of me and all that. And we're just kind of walking around. I'm like, hey, look at how cute it is out here. It's a nice, like, proper fall day. It was pretty chilly, but like big, bright, beautiful skies. And the pond had frozen over a little bit because we had had a cold snap before everybody got up here. So I was walking with everybody up to the pond. And Chloe's dog, Gray, goes running off of the dock on the pond and launches just right off into the pond. Breaks through the ice. Palmer goes, she's gonna drown! So here comes Chloe, dressed to the nines, in platform Doc Martens, a leather trench coat, like leather pants, rings, and she just goes launching into the pond to save her dog. She breaks through the ice. Now she's got Gray, and she's like treading water, trying to push Gray up. Now Gray's pushing her down, and now Chloe's drowning. And so Lulu sees this going down, and Lulu jumps in the pond to save her sister. And Lulu's fully clothed too. So now I've got two nieces like fully clothed, drowning in the pond. The dogs are like scrambling to get out. Then one of the Chihuahuas jumps in because of all of the action and seeing Lulu in the pond. And it was just like absolute mayhem. And Palmer and I, who, you know, we're not really rattled very easily. We're just kind of like standing on the banks of the pond waiting to see what happens. I'm like, all right, I'm going to give this about 5 more seconds. And if no one scrambles out of here, I guess I'm jumping in after them. The girls, God bless them, they crawled out of the pond like absolutely soaking wet and freezing. Put on a fire in the house. Everybody changed into warm clothes. And, you know, we had some platform Doc Martens sitting next to the fire all night drying off.
And what about all that leather, Alex? That was a goner.
I think that the leather may have survived. I don't know. If you treat it with conditioner or something, maybe it comes back. I don't know. Maybe it was faux.
Unbelievable. Did it all work out? I mean, everything came out well. And
the turkey was great. Yeah. I think, thank goodness, the food was good. Because if the food had stunk, that would have been a pretty rough Thanksgiving for those girls. They rallied and we had a great time.
It's not a tradition that you want to continue, but you've had, I guess, 2 more Thanksgivings. This will be the third one after that. Have the girls come back, or is there a new cast of characters? How are you doing with it?
Yeah. The girls come back every year. Looking forward to seeing them again. I was on the phone with Chloe earlier talking about the plans. So excited to have them coming back up. Yeah, new cast of characters always. We've got boyfriends coming up this year. We've got a couple of my friends that haven't been up here joining us. So it's been sort of like, as my Thanksgivings have always gone, it's always sort of like a rotating door of characters, which is great. You know, it keeps things interesting.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, listen, I'm going to have you back another time because I want to talk about your trip to Hawaii. And I want to hear what your impressions were about Maui after the fire and everything. And we also want to talk about your new business. So quickly, just tell the listener what that is.
Well, so I've just started a snack business where we're selling South African cured meat called Biltong, and the company is called Brave, and we're actually going to be selling at the Calicoon Farmers Market very soon, potentially starting this winter, but definitely in the spring, and so we're excited to kick it off because I'm such a fan of that farmers market. Been making friends there for years since I moved up here, and it's going to be nice to join that community, so you guys will be able to see everything in person very soon. But if you like, you know, finding better protein options that aren't covered in sugar like jerky or aren't coming in powder form like shakes and these sorts of things, then Brave Biltong is for you.
And how do you spell the name of the company?
B-R-A-V-E, like Brave.
Okay.
And then Biltong is B-I-L-T-O-N-G. And you'll be able to find us at bravebiltong.co. We'll be launching the website any day now.
Okay. Well, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving with no incidences. And I'll look forward to having you back on the show again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Donna.
That's it for Catskill Character today. I sure hope you have a memorable and delicious Thanksgiving with all the trimmings and none of the drama. Many thanks to Teresa Tulipano, Tommy Cambridge, and Alex Hancock. And thanks to you, the listener, for tuning in today. Please come back next Saturday to Catskill Character at 10:30 for more exciting stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond, right here on Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks for listening.
Sullivan County's social host law, Jared's Law, makes it illegal for anyone 18 or older to provide alcohol or cannabis to minors. Named for a local teen killed in a drunk driving accident, Jared's Law ensures that adults are held accountable, with penalties including fines and even jail time. Parents and guardians are still the number one deterrent to underage substance use, and Jared's Law helps keep our kids safe. Paid for by Catholic Charities.
I'm Laura Flanders. Join me Monday evenings at 7 on Radio Catskill for Laura Flanders and Friends. It's the show where the people who say it can't be done take a backseat to the people who are doing it. Then stay with us for three more Powerhouse Talk programs back to back. Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk at 7:30, The Janice Adams Show at 8, and La Voz en Breve with Mariel Fiore at 9. Monday evenings, starting at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
Last week on Wait Wait, Tiffany Haddish told us what she did once she finally started making money after years of struggle.
Yeah, I bought a $359 microscope that took pictures of bacteria. And did you know that some bacteria look just like people?
I'm Peter Sagal. You've paid your dues, so time to enjoy your reward. This week's news quiz. That's Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.